Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to PodNuts Daily, episode number 448, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Halish. I'm joined today by Lisa Hendrickson from callthatgirl.biz. How you doing, Lisa?
I'm good. How you doing?
I am doing excellent. Another wonderful snowy day in Michigan.
Oh, my. And I'm down in Las Vegas where it's like 50, 60 degrees, loving it.
Nice. Very cool. So you kind of, you've been off the radar a little bit. You've been traveling all over the world and doing all kinds of different things. So why don't you kind of give us a backstory on where you've been, what you've been up to, and how your travels have gone?
Yeah, it's been I considered 14 months. I was on the road. In summer of 2014, I broke up with my boyfriend. I wasn't happy with my personal life, where I was living. Business was fine, but I just wasn't happy, you know? So I said, why don't I move down to Florida and go to the Keys? So that was the first thing. A lot of people remember I promoted that up and down.
Right.
And I ended up getting to Marathon because now that it's in the past, I can admit it, I had a huge bridge anxiety with the bridges down there.
Oh, okay.
And, it was horrible, Jeff. It was like the thought of driving over that 7-mile bridge absolutely put me into a stroke mode. I was like, I couldn't even think of it. So I ended up just staying in Marathon where I had the hotel because I figured that was a good middle spot. It's in the middle of the Keys. Well, okay, you get down there and it's pretty expensive. I got there in low season, so I stayed there for 3 months and then realized, wow, it's like $5,000 a month to stay in the Keys. And I said, I don't make that much money. So I couldn't stay there. So I headed up to Miami because I met a couple down in Marathon and they said, hey, come stay with us for a few months. You know, we've got an extra bedroom. And so I stayed there with them for a few months. And then in the meanwhile, my brother and I decided to buy a house in Iowa, kind of a family house because we're from Minnesota. So then he drove down. We went back up, and then for almost 3 months, I lived in Iowa. And within the first month, Jeff, I mean, no offense to people from Iowa. It just wasn't for me.
Right, right.
So I was already thinking, where am I going to go next winter? And you know what? I thought, okay, I did Florida already. I would love to do California, but California is just a real busy, busy roads. There is no like downtime there. So I wanted to find another place to live that was kind of like more calm, but yet not. I thought Las Vegas. So last spring, I decided I would spend the winter in Las Vegas and keep my Iowa home. But then in June is when I had a whole bunch of personal problems come up. And then, of course, you know, I couldn't make it to Chicago because of that. And I had to go on the road and end up staying in Tulsa for 2 months. It was kind of like the halfway point between Iowa and Vegas. And I kind of wanted to beat the heat. Do you know how hot it gets here in Vegas in the summer?
I have no idea. I'm pretty sure it's hot, though.
It is freaking hot. I was already watching the temp gauges. It was 115. And I just was like, look, I'm going to stay in Tulsa, beat the heat out. And it was actually perfect timing. So I stayed there for 2 months. I got a really nice apartment and enjoyed that time there. Then my friend flew in. We drove to Vegas, and I rented a house, and I've been here, I don't know, a month and a half.
Oh, okay.
I love it.
That's good. Good.
Vegas is so perfect for me. The weather's great. It's a city everywhere, and people are really cool. And there's a lot of technology stuff going on here. In fact, I signed up to go to a podcast meetup in 2 weeks.
Nice. Yeah, there's a lot of podcast meetups over in that area.
Yeah, there's a lot of tech stuff going on here right now with the downtown. The guy, Tony from Zappos, one of the PodNuts listeners actually tuned me into that, said there's a huge tech like mecca going on here. So I'm just getting my feet wet, just getting excited and starting to get out more. It's pretty cool here. I like it.
Good. Well, it sounds good. Sounds like an interesting travel around the United States anyways. So that's
I put on the miles, but that Call That Girl truck did it all. She and I worked on the road with my hotspot all the time. It was nice. So awesome. And in fact, people are like, how'd you work? And I'm like, well, the neat thing is my business is so perfect for remote support because that's all I do. I mean, I could be anywhere. You know, I just had a really good hotspot and I just really had to stop and do hotel stops based on the appointments. And I mean, business didn't falter at all.
Nice.
Nope. In fact, I think I figured out a lot of business stuff and that's what we're going to talk about today. You know, kind of in general of, you know, this last year and 2 months, whatever, was really good for me for personal life and for business, I think.
Gotcha. All right. So with that being said, what types of things are you doing in your business now? What types of things have you learned that you're going to take forward into your business? Because obviously, everybody that's known you for a while knows your business has went through many different variations, and you're kind of learning what your niche is. And it sounds like you've really dived into a single niche that's making you happy.
You know, that's really true. And I think looking back to 2007 when I first started out, I didn't have Podnuts friends. I didn't have Technibble friends. I was just a girl who got fired from a job who didn't know, but I did know I wanted to have my own company. I didn't know doing what.
Right.
So going back almost, it's 8 years now, I started off going homes, you know. Then I realized, well, in the winters in Minnesota, I couldn't drive it, so I started doing remote. And then people wanted to bring in computers into stores. So I started opening stores. And then through all the years, I don't like stores. I don't like going to people's houses. I hate hardware. So part of the going niche thing was that started 2 years ago when I decided I'm closing all the stores and going remote only. And that's a huge decision to make.
Sure.
Because I had to find referral partners because not everything could be done remote. I needed to have people who own stores that could be my referral partner. I needed to find on-site techs that could be my referral partner. And when I went out and picked and chose those people, it was based on relationships I'd already had. I didn't just come cold, you know?
Right.
Because my clients are mine. I wanted to make sure that they didn't go steal them. And if they did, it was for a reason. Like, I just don't do servers. So they can steal that client. You know what I mean? So that's the first thing I try to tell people when I tell my story is make sure you have really good, strong relationships that you know that there's a trust there if you're referring out your own clientele.
Right.
Yep. And so then as the first year went through, I still did the remote support for techs stuff, but I started finding I needed to outsource it even more. And at that point, I had a white label partner that was supporting the tech jobs. And within that first year, we started selling an MSP program and some other things, which was good for sales, you know?
Right.
But then things changed and I decided I no longer want to do tech support, period.
Okay.
So here's where other people might be doing the same thought adjustment is I don't want to do everything. How do I just focus on my own? And I started realizing that I personally was bringing in enough money without the tech support.
Gotcha. You know? Okay.
Like I was making it just on my Outlook calls, Outlook, Office 365. My schedule was really clean. It was just me, you know? And so the thing I learned was that you have to make a decision. Like you're going to do it or you're not, you know? And so with your clients, when you start talking about stuff, you have to realize which referral partner gets the work.
Right.
And you are the manager and still the owner. See what I mean?
Right. Sure.
So it's kind of like you have to make the decision. So at that point I had not only the on-site guys, the stores, the white label partner, I also had new referral partners for other work. I have a server referral partner. I have a WordPress referral partner. I have a business contact manager. You know what that is?
Not really.
It's an add-on for Outlook that's like a CRM system.
Oh, yeah. People are still using it?
Oh, God, yes. Yes, the way you said that is funny. They're still using that?
Well, it's funny because the last time I tried to use it was in 2007, and it was so cumbersome that I said, forget it.
2007 was like the big year that it came installed on the CD.
Right.
So that's why people were like, hey, I'm going to try it. Unfortunately, Microsoft didn't really get a hit off it because they didn't give anybody good tutorials, and it was very confusing. And if it
no,
broke,
not Microsoft.
Not Microsoft. Not good tutorials. But, I mean, I had people that actually did it themselves and would call me and say, Lisa, my BCM is all messed up. And, I mean, tell you, I had to wing it a lot fixing those SQL. It wasn't a SQL server. It was just a SQL database issue usually.
Okay.
But anyway, 2007 was the big year. And so I found that people are still using it. So I have a referral partner for them. And I have a referral partner for Access, Excel, PowerPoint, and Microsoft Word experts.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I've kind of got myself into this big partnership circle, which I love because I still do the marketing for the calls. I refer out the work, and then I get commissions.
Right.
So to me, it's just been – it's kind of like a help desk for everything.
Right. So – okay.
When I find something I want to go do, I go out and market it for somebody, and I take the first level call, decide if it's for me or not, and pass it over.
There you go.
So that's okay. What I've been doing. Yeah. And it's been working, and I really like it. The commission checks are nice. It's going to get better because I finally figured this out in the last year. And I'm very clear with my clients if they're getting a referral or if it's work billed by me. That's what I think – I've talked about this before, is managing expectations.
Right. Exactly.
You tell a client, okay, I have a referral partner. They're going to bill you. So don't call me and complain. That's a referral partner for a reason, you know? And I've had these referral partners, Jeff, say, well, how about if I bill you? And I'm like, well, then that gets into billing and invoicing.
Right.
I don't want to deal with that. I just would rather take the commission check.
Yeah, you got to find what's going to work for you. I know there's out in the industry, a lot of people will say, if you have an employee, you can control that employee. If you have a referral partner or a subcontractor, you can't really control them. And they can damage your business one way or the other by either bad work or not communicating right with the customer, those different types of things. So there's that. You got to find that sweet point, and you got to find whatever. I think you can find either one of those will work in your business. You just have to make it work for you.
Yeah. And I think that with any referral or support partner, it's the expectations that you set in the beginning, I think, are really critical. Like with my on-site guys up in Minneapolis, luckily they are super rock stars. They could probably handle everything. And my remote clients would probably like them to come over, like the good old days.
Right.
Come over. But, you know, a lot of these clients of mine are on prepay tickets. And then I have to get into the, well, that's not covered under the prepay ticket. And that's my bread and butter.
Right.
I mean, for those that are listening and want to start kicking butt with money, selling prepay tickets is the cash cow. I mean, I kill it every month with those.
Nice.
And it keeps my services intact where I get those calls in to fill between the other appointments. So, but again, the expectations are to tell a client, okay, this is only for remote only. If I have to come out, you're going to pay an extra invoice. Or a referral partner can't be billed under that. And I very rarely get people who, in fact, almost never, that have a problem with that, as long as you're clear.
Right. Yeah, as long as you let them know what's going on. They just want their machine fixed or their software fixed or whatever it is that you're working on. That's all they're interested in. Most of the time, they really, I mean, yeah, a lot of times they might like you, but the reality is they really just want their end product fixed.
Yeah, well, a lot of these people remember me from 8 years ago coming over to their house.
Mm-hmm.
And the strange thing is I remember going to their house and their cat sitting on my lap and their icky mouse with had crusty stuff on it. And I mean, I remember that. I don't remember what I did last week, Jeff.
I hear you.
Someone's house from 8 years ago, though.
Sure.
It's just funny. But yeah, but that's the thing is when people say, okay, so I do marketing nationally now for Outlook Work. I've been doing this for a long time. And when people say, well, I really want someone to come in. I'm like, go ahead. Go find someone locally. I mean, if you want someone to sit there and handhold you, it's going to cost you three times as much.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Because they're going to charge you to sit and watch you move that email.
Absolutely.
And I won't. So I win a lot of the clients for that, but some, they are very insistent on local, because in my marketing, it says I service your area.
Right. Well, and that's the differences about businesses, because I don't want anybody outside my local area. I want to be the old fashioned local mom and pop shop that you come to, you can have a conversation with. But that's how I built my business. That's why people come to my home. So I do it a little bit different than a lot of people in the industry, but it's what works for me. So that's,
do you still go out? Do you still go out to people's houses?
Very rarely. Yeah. I don't, most people, you know what, they want to save a dollar, so they'll actually drop it off.
Yeah. You're at the home office, so.
Yeah, exactly. So, it works well. And again, that's the nice thing about this business. You can do it many different ways. You just got to find that niche that's going to work for you.
Oh, exactly. And there are plenty of, I mean, in all the years I've been in these pod circles or tech circles, everybody that seems to do it their way, it works for them.
Exactly.
And other people can be like, I don't want anybody at my house.
Right, exactly. And there's a lot of people like that. And I understand, believe me, I understand that.
Yeah. Well, no one's coming to my house anymore. In fact, I remember the last time in Rochester when I had someone come to my house, I was like, this is the last person coming to my house.
Gotcha.
I did not like it at all.
Right.
I was so uncomfortable. In fact, it was funny. I had a garage sale and my brother told one of the people that they didn't speak English, that, or they did enough, but he told them I fixed computers. And what they do at 9 o'clock at night, brought their whole family over.
Oh my.
A computer. I'm in my pajamas. I had a couple glasses of wine. I'm like, what are you doing at my house? It was so uncomfortable. And I was like, never again.
Oh, that's funny. See, Now I haven't had any of those types of situations where people will always, for whatever reason, I mean, people are a lot of times price shopping, so they'll call and we set up an appointment from that point.
Yeah, and that's more consulting, I think, at some level.
Yeah.
You know, you talk on the phone, you build a relationship, they come over, you're okay with that at that point.
Right, exactly.
You know.
Yeah, I don't have people just randomly showing up to my door because I don't advertise and I'm just open up, you know.
Hey, come on
24/7, yeah, we'll fix your stuff. Come on.
Let's have some dinner while you're here.
Right.
Some strangers. That's the thing is I just couldn't, when I first started the business, I remember when I had to have people come to my house because their computer was dead. Now, beyond the fact that I didn't know hardware very well, and I would have to like spend hours and hours trying to figure out stuff, I didn't like them coming in my house.
Right.
It was like my cat was there, my dog was there. They saw my personal life. I was like, I didn't like it at all.
Right. No, that's definitely understandable. And a lot of people are like that. And I think it all depends on the area you live in and whether that's going to work out for where you're at logistically.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, in the past year, I've changed I changed to have a scheduling system, which might work for you, but I don't know. It's called VCETA. Have you heard of it?
No, I don't think I have.
Well, if you go to my website, anybody can listen and can test it out. You go to callthatgirl.biz. At the bottom, I have a pop-up window. So it lets people schedule time with me.
Gotcha.
I started using this in February, and I have almost 900 bookings in it now. It is such a lifesaver. I have people go there. They find the appointment they want. They go pick a time. It makes them fill out my client agreement form, and then they pay all in one shot.
Nice.
So I get the appointment. I accept it. They go. I get the client agreement form, which I require for every call. Then I get their payment, and that is a solidified appointment. I call them at the appointment. Do you know how much all the wasted time I got rid of from doing that?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, I love it. It is. It's a lifesaver. I paid $200 for a year.
Okay.
So it, to me, for remote work, it totally paid off. So if anybody's like trying to figure out this out for their home visits, I don't see why it wouldn't work. And for maybe even people like you.
Yeah, I have the ability. So Repair Shopper, which is my CRM invoicing system, has that in there. And I can add it to my website and my customers can do the same thing. I haven't gotten it in there yet. It would be a great idea to be able to put the times that I am available so people could pick, hey, you know, how about this time or this time or this time? Because it's only a handful of times during the day that I allow people to come in and drop their stuff off. So,
yeah, I didn't know if Repair Shopper had that in there. I think that I'm learning more about that tool as I'm starting to. I'm already dedicated to a ticket system, married to one for life. So for me to even start to peek at other programs is like teasing myself.
Oh, yeah. No, if you're happy with what you have and it's working for you and doing the things you need to do, that's what you need to stick with.
Yeah. Mine doesn't have a scheduling system, but that Visita, boy, that is just something else. It, to me, it's just saved me, you know, going back and forth like this is kind of how I got talking about this, when people want to come over to my house and I'd be like, well, when am I going to be home? And the scheduling problems. And it was just like,
right.
I had to have my house clean. That was the worst part. You know, I was like, oh my God, someone's coming over. But so anyway, this scheduling system has been a real lifesaver for me. I can answer the appointments on my phone. The best part is I went to a whole new, you don't even get on my calendar until you pay. It's been hard because you have to train all your old clients.
Gotcha.
That for years you were like, yeah, I'll just talk to you Tuesday at 2:00. No, there's a new system and you're going to follow it. And it's retraining them. But they respect the professionalism and your time. So they will do it.
I think that's the only way that you can probably get that to work. It's best is you got to be able to have people committing to getting their stuff worked on, not just making appointments.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense to have them pay up front and get that ready to go so that you know it's not going to be a dead appointment, or if it is, it's because of some emergency or something like that.
Well, I also have them commit to paying $49 if they miss their appointment.
Nice. Okay.
So that's the bonus is that, you know what's funny is every time you think you are winning, right, with your business, you're like, I am doing so awesome. Everything is working. Then you have one client that'll like, that you trusted. And this is what happened to me a few weeks ago is I had one that I've known since I started my business. She was great. She doesn't call in much, but when she does, we chat, catch up. The appointment was set for 2:00 on Friday, 1 minute before 2:00. Hey, Lisa, I'm still the clients. Can we do this this weekend or next week some night? Okay. I don't work weekends and I don't work at night. And plus, you just canceled 1 minute before the appointment. Why? Because I trusted you. Now, if I had made her pay, you know she wouldn't have missed that appointment.
Right.
So then I kind of changed another thing. I had another client call in 5 minutes before her appointment and cancel. And that was because I did not take the money. So now I've just – I mean – I was doing that already, but these were already past clients. So now I just made a new rule. None at all. Everybody has to pay. It's just, you know, if they cancel, then I get the $49. Then the other people have paid that before. But to me, it's just kind of like, it just makes it serious.
Right.
And I'm a consultant. I'm $139 an hour.
Right.
If you cancel, I don't get your money.
And you've locked out that hour so that you don't get paid for that hour. That makes perfect sense that you want them to pay you that up front. I don't see anything wrong with that. That's probably the best way to do it.
It is, and I get plenty of online bookings from people on Google finding me, and they know, they can tell. I think that Visita program puts another level of professionalism in the play. That okay, it's actually making me do a process.
Right.
It's just not asking for my credit card.
Right. Exactly.
So I get plenty of work that way. Yeah, it's been nice that. I can't complain. Business is going good, but now I'm like, okay, I'm happy in Vegas. My life is okay. Do I grow or do I take a break for a little bit? I want to grow, but I want the break. I'm like liking it.
Well, you got to find that sweet spot in between where you're working enough to where it makes it worthwhile, but you're not overworking where you're running around like a chicken with your head cut off and not really, you're wasting a lot of money that.
Yeah. I'm just worried about the problems I had in the past is doing them again because I already know it.
Right. You
know? That's what scares me is I already know how to build the wrong business. So I have to do counter thoughts on everything. I can't do it that way again. And that's what makes me a little nervous about regrowing. I mean, I think that I would be in a good place to have the best Outlook experts, a migration team to do the Office 365 migrations. I want to add a blacklist expert, and I want a training team. That's my goal.
Gotcha.
For the new business.
Yeah.
But I do kind of all of that. But now I need to find techs that only want to do Outlook. There's not any out there, hardly.
No, because there's quite honestly, I'd rather stick a fork in my eye than work in Outlook. So
that's how I think. Well, you know, I have one tech that I don't know if I should say his name or not. He actually enjoys working with me. He works though 9 to 5 during the day.
Okay.
So I only get him for a very short window of time after work.
Right.
So it would be great if he like said, "Hey, I'll quit my job and work for you if I can pay him what he could make."
Right. Right.
I can't. So I'm in that I have to figure it out place, you know. Probably find someone local here that's, you know, got a couple years of help desk under their belt, and I have to train them from scratch.
Well, I think it comes to the point where you kind of, and this is the way I looked at my business. I've done many different things in it, but I kind of go back to the basics every once in a while and just start that fresh where I've got control of a lot of things. And then if I get to the point where I'm so busy that I just don't literally have no time, then it's time to add some people in the mix and figure out who we can get to support different areas of the business that I probably shouldn't be working on at that point.
Well, or you can cut back your clientele too, and that's another way to manage the busyness.
Well, I do that right from the beginning though. I control the clients way before they get to me. It's like, yeah, you and I ain't gonna work well together. Sorry. And I don't tell them exactly like that. I basically, when people call up and they ask about price, and they'll say, "Well, how much is this going to cost me?" Well, you know, it's going to cost you this and this, and if this is wrong, it's going to cost you that, and if that's wrong, it's going to cost you this. And usually, well, let me talk to so-and-so and I'll get back to you. And I already know they're never going to call back. But yeah. I've just gotten rid of a headache client that I don't have to worry about. Now, the clients that call up and go, "My computer's down. It says my hard drive is broken. I want to recover the data on there. When can I drop it off?" Hey, you can drop it off at such and such a time. Great.
Yeah, when price is the factor, you know that's your perfect client.
That's the client. Those are my clients. So the other ones, I don't waste my time anymore because it was too much of a time sink, and they were the ones where I was spending most of my time and making no money.
Jeff, don't you think this comes with experience? I mean, your listeners, you know, range from, you know, the hobbyist up to MS pre-enterprise level.
Oh, yeah,
know?
Absolutely.
Anybody that has experience knows that it's the 80-20 rule, you've talked about it, that it's the 20% of the crappy people that take up 80% of your time,
right.
And that's so true.
I think a lot of times you have to get to the point where you're not afraid to turn away business no matter what the cost. And I think a lot of people get stuck at the point where they're so afraid because they feel that in order to make a living and do what they do, they've got to take everything that comes to them. And I've done that, been there, done that, don't want to do it again, not interested. I'll do it my way.
Well,
one at a time.
When I get clients that when they ask me what my price is right away, I can't consider that someone I don't want because first of all, when you go looking for an Outlook expert on the internet, there's not very many of us out there. So
right,
to
exactly.
Me, I'm like, hey, I'm 140. What's your problem?
Right.
You know, then I get talking to them and then you, da, 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 you know, it's, I mean, I don't mind telling them right away. It's not to me, like with what you said, it's not someone I'm going to possibly lose right away. What I don't like is I've gotten to pick them out is I can tell type A personality or type B through Z personality, which is my people.
Right.
And one guy, right off the bat, he was like, "I'm a lawyer. I'm in New Jersey." And he was just dinty, 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 dinty. And I said right away within the first minute, I said, "You know what? I'm already going to tell you that I'm not your technician. I just don't feel that this is a job I can help you with because I don't want to work with him."
Right. Sure. Absolutely.
I could already tell he was going to nickel and dime me, not for my money, but for my time.
Right.
And he was so like in that first minute, he didn't stop at all. And I get those people, but I could tell he was going to be really resilient to the things I had to tell him. And then he goes, why don't you want to help me? I'm like, well, because you already have fantasies that Office 365 is going to be like your one all be all. And I said, and for someone like you, it's not. And I go, and this isn't going to just work for me because this is not what I do. And he goes, well, you're the Office 365 expert I found on the internet. I said, yeah, but I'm telling you. Okay, so again, I told him I'm not. It took me 5-8 minutes to get rid of him.
That's wild.
He did not want to let me fire him. And I was like, I'm firing you, dude. I'm telling you that now. It is not happening. Now, and I don't even care.
Right.
It was a $1,000 ticket.
Now there is a difference. If somebody does ask my hourly on-site rate, that's different than when they say, my hard drive's gone, I've got all my pictures on there, I need this, and how much is this going to cost me?
Yeah.
When you're at that point, it's like, are you really interested in getting your stuff back, or are you just interested in the cost? Because, and that's where a lot of people are at. It's the cost. They're very interested in what, if it's over $200, or to be honest with you, for a lot of people, if it's anywhere near $200, they're like,
no.
So, guess what? Take it down the street to the kid for $50, and when he wipes all your data and loses all that stuff, you're on your own. I don't know what to tell you. You can have somebody that's been in the business for well over 15 years, or you can have somebody that's been in the business for, a handful of years, and maybe they know what they're doing, maybe they don't.
So. Yeah. That's like when this lady the other day called. She was like, type A personality. I could already tell I was not going to take her. But I had to almost fight her. She goes, Lisa, what is your guarantee on this?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I can't guarantee anything. This is where I knew she wouldn't call me back. I go, no, unfortunately, I don't guarantee anything. I go, I will tell you this. I'm very fast. I know Outlook very well. I'm very worth my money. But I cannot give you a guarantee I'll fix anything. I don't even know what I'm dealing with.
Right.
Really? I mean, I'm telling her over the phone. She tells me her problems. I say I could probably fix them. I mean, honestly, and when people ask me if I have a guarantee, I say I don't need one.
Right. Red flag.
Isn't that bad?
Well, because we all know we're going to do the best of our ability to get the job done no matter what. And we already understand that. But when people are looking for that guarantee or looking for a certain way of doing business, they're looking for the wrong type of thing, or they're asking the wrong type of question. And like you said, you can tell what type of person that is, and you can go, you know what, that person is going to be worth more to me, not as a customer than they are otherwise.
What it comes down to, I think, is that people like her, it wasn't the money. She just wanted it fixed. Now here's what I tell people is I'm either going to fix it or find you a new solution, but guess what?
Right.
Nobody leaves call that girl almost, and I want to say that as a disclaimer, with a no fix.
Right.
I just fix things. That's what you do.
Exactly.
You fix things. We just really don't ever go, you know what, I just can't fix that.
Right. Everything's fixable.
Everything's fixable. Either you fix or you get a new solution. So
exactly.
I tell you that I actually put on my website a new expectations list that if anybody rolls upon it, if you have IMAP and Gmail, you're looking at a 2 to 3 hour call. I don't know how other techs are fixing this crap, but I can tell you it takes me 2 or 3 hours. And so when I book appointments now, I say, okay, you have a lot of mail, right? And they go, yeah. I go, okay, I'm going to need your computer all day, but I'm only going to be billing you for like 2 to 3 hours because I probably have to do some hardcore reworking and surgery. And they go, oh my God, really? I said, I'm just telling you based upon the last years of calls I've had, this is average. So you get that expectation now that you're going to have a $400 bill and I need your computer all day.
Right. Now, let me ask you a question on that, because again, everybody knows we've had this conversation before as I use IMAP in Outlook. Now, from that standpoint, what is broken? Is it Outlook that's broken, or is it actually the Gmail account that's broken?
Yeah, it is Outlook that it's breaking, but it's because of what Gmail does to it.
Okay.
And so texts that don't experience these problems or get the calls, I'll just tell you that I get these because these are really hot messes. What happens is, especially in 2007 and 10, that the IMAP setup from Gmail has hidden folders. You have to expand the folders to see them, but there's two. One is called All Mail, and one is called Important. Now, those used to be old labels in the old Gmail system, but now they have promotions and something else.
Okay, so, right.
I don't see this a lot in 2013 because they turned off the All Mail folder. And gotcha. 2016. But if you have 2007, 2010, and people have a hang up with Gmail, especially the biggest flag is it won't stop synchronizing. And if it won't stop syncing, the All Mail folder is probably chock full of every single email you've sent and received since you had that account.
Oh, okay.
So that's a huge, huge thing for me. I get paid from, I can't tell you how many companies every quarter to go clean that crap out.
So I'm just thinking through my head of how this works because I've been using it for so many years. So there's no way to basically go in and just basically uninstall that account and just reset the account up?
Yeah. So here's the two fixes I do.
Okay.
The easiest fix for me is to go move out all the mail to a PST folder because nobody wants, these are my people, the hoarders, nobody wants any mail gone. And I don't delete mail either. So as just a backup precaution for my work and for people who search heavily, I move the mail out. Now, here's the problem, Jeff, is All Mail is just a duplicate copy of stuff you've already dealt with.
Right, right.
But I'll tell you, if you have moved, I learned this from this summer, if somebody has folders that they've moved that from, you go move it out of All Mail, it takes it out of the folder sometimes. Mm. So people are like, where's my email? So I just have a new rule. I don't delete ever, and I move mail to a PST file that's under the IMAP down below. So basically, the first thing I'll do is clear out that All Mail, and that might take a while, but then you have a corrupted OST file. The OST doesn't match the Gmail server size. So sometimes what I do is I will recreate a new IMAP account and let the fresh email come down, and then they're all happy. Or sometimes I hide the All Mail and the important from the syncing in the IMAP folders. And then you close Outlook reboot and it comes up and those won't synchronize anymore.
So let me get this right. So from that standpoint, so when people are moving stuff around in their Outlook using Gmail's IMAP, isn't all the stuff already still backed up on the Gmail?
Well, maybe. My client this summer didn't get it backed up.
Huh. Interesting. No, I'm curious because I'm like, every time I've reinstalled Outlook, all I basically do is point my IMAP back to my Outlook and boom, all my file folder structures, everything's right there because I never did anything on the web side of it. So I've never really deleted anything or, you know, as far as all my stuff. So I'm just curious how that, it must be something to corruption.
Yes, it should be there, but you got to remember that the calls I get, people are using, and this is no kidding, I'll just talk about the client this summer. It was it was a 10-hour horrifying ordeal.
Oh my gosh.
He had Outlook 2007 on an XP computer. And I get this, you're going to die even more. It was all on POP.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Big mess.
Yeah, I can see the problem there. I can definitely see a problem there.
You got to remember, back in the day, in 2003 and 2007, IMAP would create a POP account, a PST. So the OSTs, I hate to be called out on this, but this is from memory. So 2007, you could create a PST file that never matched the server. So my client had a 30-gig PST file from these years of hoarding the Gmail. Now, on XP and 2007, I can't even believe that thing didn't blow right up.
Right, exactly.
So what I did was I told him, I can't even help you on this computer. It's literally going to die. So I said, well, look, I'll do what I can on my side. So I am dumb. Now, this is a client I've had for a long time. So the trust was already there. I downloaded all of his 30 gigs to my laptop. Then I had to go clean out the Gmail, right?
Okay.
So I could get it going on his XP computer and the 2007. Well, he didn't want to upgrade his computer. I already told him right away, you got to upgrade this. But see, he was traveling for months and he was remoting in.
Mm.
Okay. So there was no way to upgrade it for all these months. Okay. So 30 gigs backed up oops, it's corrupted. I had to go and fix it. So I found all the mail. Well, I was like, okay, good. So I've got all the mail. He emails me and says, hey, my folders are all missing. And I'm like, no, they're all there. And you know what? They were not there. Oh. I went back in and they were empty.
Oh.
So because it was on pop, it stripped it out.
Okay.
I don't even know if I can even explain this whole story, Jeff, but I'll just tell you that I told the client, I then remoted in and moved that 30 gig repaired file over, and it fit on the XP computer, but Outlook wouldn't open it because of the restrictions of 2007.
Right, exactly.
So I told him, we're done. Until you get a new computer, I'm not even going to help you anymore. Your files are there. Be safe. They're there. But that was 10 hours.
Right.
No, and then I told him, you only paid me four, so I'm not going to be able to do any more work till you pay me more. Can't you just finish this job with that? Like, what am I working for, $20 an hour now, female?
Right.
Apparently.
Oh.
And the worst part is his Mosey backup only went back 30 days, and he called me 5 days after it didn't back up.
So oh.
That's what I hate about online backup.
Yeah. Well, and that's funny because there's a lot of companies out there that sell only online backup, and I actually refuse. If customers want to buy it on their own, that's up to them, whatever. But I actually sell them the middle tier of Carbonite, which makes them plug a external hard drive in, and it's going to do a mirror image of their system on that hard drive daily, and it's going to back everything up to the cloud. I just make them do that because here's the thing. I can't guarantee one way or the other, but if I have the files in three different places, I guarantee I'm going to have one of those at some point in time.
Yeah.
So.
You know, I just kind of quit caring about backup, Jeff. I had to because I'm being hired to fix one piece of software.
Right.
So I don't think when you call a QuickBooks expert that they go and make you back up your entire computer first. I had to do the math and be like, it isn't my responsibility if they're backing up or not.
Right.
I have signed my waiver. I do have options if they want to purchase it, but I don't require it anymore. But I will tell you this, that if you're dealing with someone's life, which is Outlook, I mean, literally, people live and breathe by it, that if I need to back it up, well, we're backing it up.
Right.
If I feel there's any jeopardy of me losing mail, I will actually, before I even get going, say, you know what? I need an hour. I'm going to back up this big pig, and then we can work. I mean, some people have 20, 30 gigs, and I'm like, I want that fully backed up, and I know it's backed up. I don't trust them.
Now, are you going to still continue to see that problem in Outlook 2013 and beyond with IMAP and things like that?
No, it's actually been a lot better, but okay. The problem still is this, is that, so what I do is I optimize Outlook 2013 and 16 every time right now. I help anybody. I do a little freebie optimizing. Believe it or not, it's like an Outlook tune-up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I do that so I know that they won't call back for those problems in the future, which, yeah, I can make more money, but I mean, that's just kind of my little thing I do.
Sure.
Because sometimes the people that call back want the free support because they already paid you. So I just kicked that out of the problem. But 2013, yes, it has problems with IMAP still. And yes, so does 16. It's mostly due to size of people that have had Gmail accounts since the day Gmail opened.
Okay.
Which was in 2003, I think. I find email going back to and email folders. I mean, just because you have a new Outlook, which... I mean, 2013 can hold. I mean, that sucker can hold. But I still get calls. It breaks.
Huh. Very interesting.
16 to me, I don't know. They're upgrade for that. The only thing I don't like is that you can't just manually set up Exchange anymore. The client has to have AutoDiscover. So anybody listening, if you've been having problems with setting up accounts in 16, like the old way, like your old server... Yeah, you can't do it anymore. The website DNS has to have auto discover set up.
Oh, okay. Now, what does that do?
Well, it basically, this is the easy way to say it, is the website, the domain, the DNS settings, tells the Exchange settings that they have a shortcut. It's called auto discover that makes it easy to set up.
Okay.
So that's the short
Gotcha. Okay. No, that makes sense.
That's why phones can set up so easy with Exchange and devices, tablets. You know, okay. You don't have to do it manual. You also cannot do individual proxy settings, which the manual way, you know, there's really not much change to it, but that's – if I look broke, that's how I relied on fixing it. I was doing the manual. So, yeah, I already spent an hour with the client trying to figure that out. That was my first 2016 call. I don't know what I'm going to get. You know, I mean, people call and they just launched a new Outlook. I can't troubleshoot everything before it launches, you know?
Right. Oh, yeah. No, it's a piece of software that, quite honestly, even you can become an expert at it, but there are still going to be things that you're going to run into that you've never seen before. And you go, I didn't even know it could do that.
Well, the basics of Outlook are still the same. The account settings are pretty much the same, except they took away the manual. The, you know, they fluffed it up with some more pretty junk, like usual.
Right.
But the stuff I do, and it was funny when people are like, oh my gosh, you haven't upgraded to Windows 10 yet? I'm like, no, because the stuff I do is all the same on every computer.
Right.
I'm very lucky. Like the control panel for mail is the same server switches, the same switches work. I'm very lucky that they didn't mangle up my work for me too much. Yeah, but it's funny. They made it look so much the same that there's only one way for me to know if they got upgraded. Site, you know, is that little, there's a little like light bulb at the top. It says, "What are you looking for? Do you want help or something?" That's the only way I know.
Oh, you mean like Cortana?
Right. Oh, is that the thing? Yeah.
Yeah. That's the only way you could tell the difference between Windows 8 and Windows 10?
No, for Outlook.
Oh, so Outlook, okay.
Because they made it look exactly the same.
I gotcha, so okay.
I've learned when I remote in, I can be, and this is what's messed up is, okay, so now when I remote in, I'm like a doctor. I do a quick exam.
Right.
I look at their operating system. I go look at their Outlook. And the first thing I look for is that little light bulb in 2016 at the very top, then I know if I'm dealing with the new or not.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then I start doing my exam. I go look at the properties of the mailbox. I go look at the OST on the Windows on the computer side. I go look at the IMAP settings. I go look at how many PST files they have open. And then I start to realize how long the call is going to be. And I start going, ching, 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 ching.
Now,
your 4-hour call.
Now, let me ask. So the PST files and OST files, what's the difference between those?
Okay. Well, a PST is actually a database that holds mail, and it can be closed, and you can take it to another computer. You can keep it open all the time. You can close it and only open it when you want to. It is a database of the email folders that you put in there. It could also be an archive folder, which I don't use and don't really tell people to use anymore, of a copy of your IMAP or your POP account that has the inbox deleted and all that.
Okay.
But, you know, PSTs are still very, very valuable. Some jokers out there are trying to get rid of it, which I don't know why. My God, I live and breathe by them. But,
well, the reason I'm asking is because I haven't used a PST file in years. I actually use Outlook all the time. I've used it since 2003, and I can't remember the last time I've actually used the PST file. So I'm always curious of how that integrates with things like IMAP, Gmail, and all that kind of stuff.
Well, for you, let's just say that you're like, you start to have a problem with your IMAP, which, Jeff, I have a feeling that you're a very clean emailer, comparable to my client.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. If I've got 7 gigs up, you know, the difference with me is I have 7 email accounts in my Outlook.
Oh, one of those. You're one of those.
Yes. I try to keep it all separated, but it doesn't work real well.
Oh, God. I've seen 9 before, so at least
you're on
the list. Well, okay. So let's say that you have, let's just say that in 10 years, you're like, oh, my God, Lisa, my IMAP finally broke.
Okay.
So what I would do is I would go and take out all of your old email and put it into a PST file, call it Jeff's old email, and I would take everything from the inbox from 2003 to 2015 and move it off. It would be off your server. It would be on a local PST file so you can still search it and still find those emails.
Okay.
So it'd be like a database of old stuff. But I have a lot of people that use a PST file every single day, not because they're on POP, but because they've got just years and years of old stuff that can't be on an IMAP server. And they could put it on Exchange, but that's why when they call me, I start to do the math and tell them why they need Exchange.
Ah, okay.
I'm like, yeah, get rid of that old PST file. But your other question that you had was, what's an OST file?
Yes.
Okay, so a lot of people, I'll just say in general, think that you could take an OST file and move it to the new computer. You can't. An OST file is a shadow copy of everything in your IMAP or your Exchange.
Okay.
So you can work offline.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, so like let's say when you go look at your OST file on your computer and you're like, okay, it's 7 gigs and you have 7 gigs in your Outlook and you have 7 gigs on your server, your OST file is perfectly fine. But if something breaks really bad, and let's say, I don't know, I don't even know how people break them, but that the data is still in the OST file, Jeff.
Okay.
I and other people that know how to run repair tools can go and get that data out of there, but you just can't open it in Outlook. You can't just move it to a new computer, and you can't just go and open it up. It's like locked in. It's a cache-only copy.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, so when people move emails from one computer to another, I say don't even bring the OST file because you have to download a new copy. That's the point.
Oh, okay.
That's why you've always just been able to download your stuff. Well, that goes to an OST file on your computer.
Yeah, so whenever – so the way I do my – if I'm reinstalling my operating system and I go to put Outlook back in, all I do is point my Gmail account back into Outlook. So I don't back up PSTs, OSTs, none of, I don't use any of that stuff.
Nope. So because it'll make a new OST file.
Right.
That's where the email lives in your computer.
Gotcha. Okay.
It doesn't just live in some fantasy folder.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's the OST folder. Yeah. And it's with you, it should be in your documents in the Outlook files folder.
Right. Correct.
Yeah.
I've just never needed, it's funny because I've never needed to use it for anything. So I'm like, going, what do I even have these here for?
Yeah, well, just here's the thing. Don't do is like one of my clients. Oh, I don't need that anymore. Well, that's actually they did that to a PST. Oh, that's a huge file. I'm gonna clean it up. I don't need it. Oop. Then they deleted. They're deleted.
Right. Exactly. No, I leave that stuff alone. It's just I've never had the ability or never had the need to use it, I guess.
Oh yeah. That's funny.
Oh, very cool. All right. So yeah. What? So now. Obviously, you're doing a lot of Outlook work, and you've kind of found your niche in what you're doing. Now, you said you've kind of migrated a lot of tech work off to different referral people and different people that you're acquaintances with around the world or around. I don't know. Do you do anything overseas?
Oh boy, you know what I do, but I okay. I'm really big in India.
Oh, okay.
I get a lot of spam sex calls. From India right now, and it's been nonstop since I got to Vegas. And I get, I don't know, like they, you know what they're doing? They're sitting around with their family, calling me from some spam caller. I can hear them like enjoying their family in the background. These aren't sex calls. These are just, you know, I can hear people like communicating in their language from India. I'm assuming.
Wow.
And they call me nonstop. I can't even block the number because they pick a new number. So it's on some dialer system. I'm like, look, you guys are paying to call me.
Right.
Somebody's paying. So I block my phone at night to turn off the ringer so I don't have to hear it. And the calls don't come during the day too much.
Okay.
But in general, I do get calls from international people. I have them do Skype meetings. Not a lot, but I haven't marketed internationally yet.
Right, right.
So, I mean, Google... I don't know if I can – well, I'm still number one in Canada.
Oh, okay.
Outlook expert. I know that.
Nice.
I just don't know if people like in the UK, if I'm number one there. I don't know.
Gotcha.
But if I am, I don't get a lot of calls for it. Maybe because it's an American company, you know.
That could be. That could be.
Maybe if I can find a UK tech, that'd be great.
Right.
I think moving ahead – for me to grow the company, and like I said earlier, I don't want to do it the wrong way, is what's going to be super important to me is processes and training.
Okay.
Hardcore. just that those two things have to be done. My last time I tried growing this company, I had bad training, bad processes. I just have learned. I don't want to do it wrong.
Well, nothing's ever perfect, but you learn from your mistakes and you move ahead. That's all you really can do. And guess what? There's only, you can have one guarantee. The guarantee is you're going to make more mistakes. And that's just the way life is.
Well, the best part is the more mistakes you make, the faster you are to pick up on them.
Exactly.
You know, and you go, okay, I'm not doing that again.
Right. Yeah. As long as you learn from your mistakes, it's not a problem.
No.
It's when you don't learn from your mistakes and you keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. That's the definition of insanity.
I thought that was irony. One of the two.
Irony, insanity. That's fairly close.
Yeah. Well, I already did that. That's insane.
Oh, man.
Now, you know what? I am ready to start. I think the first thing I have to do is hire somebody to, they have to be full time. They either have to be in the Vegas area or, I don't know, they could be remote, but I am a hardcore person with a lot of stuff. You have to shadow me. And if you're going to be my Outlook tech and training, you got to be there for every job for a long time. So I have to train them, and also I'd have them do my admin work in the beginning, get to know the clients, get to know how the tickets work. And so they would be like junior tech admin / doing all the Outlook work with me. And eventually I could start saying, okay, you're ready to start doing these. You know, I'm just really finicky.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's your business. It's your reputation on the line, and that's what you really got to look for. And that's why, quite honestly, I think a lot of us out here just kind of do stuff on our own, and we're perfectly happy with that. It's I don't have to be the multi-million-dollar company that's out there supporting thousands of people. I can literally support hundreds of people and make a decent living at doing what I do.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think I do want to still have that million-dollar company. I do.
Sure.
Want that success, but I mean, I'm only in my eighth year. Facebook, Apple, and Microsoft didn't go public till year 9.
Right.
And I'm looking at, they had, you know, a different business model than I did, so I'm not doing that bad. I mean, considering, I mean, I have a good clientele, good services, I'm happy, but I just need to know the next level and finding the right person that's going to be loyal and want to learn from the bottom, because there is no jumping in.
Right.
You know, if I could find somebody that's like, oh, I know Outlook and iCloud and Gmail and all those intricacies of it. Yeah. You'll get paid starting wage way higher. Trust right. me. I just haven't found that person. If anybody's listening, you love Outlook and talking to people and can deal with working with me, let me know.
There you go. The offer's out on the table.
I'll do remote, and if you're in the UK, even better. International. Yeah, that's where I'm going to try to hope to be. I do have a little announcement, I guess.
Okay.
Mentioned it. I am going to do a morning live YouTube show.
Okay.
And my podcast show on Podnuts will still be happening. It's just going to be pieced from that.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, I it's for marketing purposes mostly.
Gotcha. Okay.
Because YouTube is just, I've been putting these videos out and I'm doing well with them. And I thought, well, I want to start doing a daily show to talk about the jobs I do and how I fix them the next day. And I got to keep up with that. Otherwise, I haven't been doing shows enough for people to keep up with the stories.
Gotcha. Okay.
So yeah, we're going to try it, Jeff. There's no guarantees, but I've scheduled it out. I'm excited to do it, and the marketing is going to be fantastic for me on YouTube because it does work.
Nice.
Well, when people are looking for stuff, they go to YouTube because they want to watch a video.
Exactly. So
there you go. And I could do screen share with it and do all these other things. But let me tell you, I'm kind of lazy. The consistency part is what's going to make me really be challenged, but I'm hoping.
Sure.
Yeah, hoping.
Well, so, Lisa, yeah. That sounds great. Yeah, definitely definitely keep us in the loop on that and all the things that you got going on. And just I know people are probably clamoring for another episode of your Outlook show and all the stuff you're doing over there and teaching kind of some of the things we talked about today that I'm always fascinated by. Again, I don't care to work on it myself, but I'm fascinated by it nonetheless. So,
well, I've actually been getting some fan mail lately. People are like, I haven't seen the show. I'm like, I know. You know what? I just haven't. This travel, and well, actually, plus, I've never really been consistent with my shows anyway. But I think when you do put out a few, people get used to it, and that's where I've kind of failed. So I was like, okay, I'm going to kill you now. I'm going to give you one every day. And, you know, there's a lot of opportunity with this podcasting stuff and that I've been learning about. So
sure.
I'm going to give it a shot. We'll see. If not, maybe it'll be once a week. But, you know, I think that the daily thing is so good for Google.
Right.
Just loves you.
Well, and YouTube's their product, so that makes perfect sense.
I know, and I've been just planning this for since I got to Vegas that I'm like, I really want to do this daily thing, and we'll see. And I did put out another ebook when I was in Tulsa. So I think, yeah, it's called Call That Girl's How to Start a Computer Repair Business. Just a basic 50-page read, super, super fast. And I've even had people that read it that were like, I haven't owned a business, and I picked up a few tips. So I'm like, cool, you know.
Nice.
We all learn anyway because no one's perfect, you know. So
exactly.
I do have a Black Friday sale coming out. I think this show will be out on Thursday, right, Jeff?
It'll be out on Tuesday, actually.
Oh, perfect. Well, I will have a link in the show notes, Jeff. I'm going to email you a few links, actually, okay, for the notes. I have a Black Friday sale for my books coming out on Friday, and since you're not on an emailing list, if you don't get one from me or one of the partners, you can I'll click on the link on well, maybe Tuesday we'll start the sale. Anybody wants it early?
There
and
you go.
The book's on $24.99 for all six, so only through Cyber Monday. So
nice.
It's a good deal, and you can kick off 2016 with a good, you know, some good reading opportunity, reading, learning, sales, and marketing.
Right. Very good. All right. Very cool. Well, that sounds awesome. And yeah, we'll definitely put those links in the show notes so you guys can click on that and get all that information that will help you out in your business. So Lisa, if people wanted to find out where you're at, obviously most of them probably know, but what's the best way to get in contact with you?
Yep. You can email me, lisa@callthatgirl.biz. You can call me, 612-865-4475. My YouTube channel is youtube.com/callthatgirl. If you want to subscribe, because I think once I do a live show, it goes out to all my subscribers. So then you know I'm live. Then you can also just check out all the other videos I did. Twitter, @callthatgirl. I don't even like Facebook or LinkedIn anymore, so I'm not even going to talk about those. That LinkedIn is just junk now, and I used to love it. God, I just feel burned, like I got burned by it.
Yeah, they all go through their hills and valleys, but yeah.
They do. But that's kind of it, yeah. Okay. And then, you know, my show on Podnuts. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, appreciate you coming out and sharing with us today. And
oh, sure. It's always so fun catching up.
Yeah, it's fun hearing about your adventures. So it was a good time.
I was going to write a script, and I'm like, what am I, crazy? It's Jeff. It's always
so fun. Very cool.
I did have to laugh, too, because I was like, no, it's never that way. No, my show is scripted. I have to have topics.
Yeah, I'm too lazy for that. So
it's the Jeff Tech Chat Show.
That's right. All right, very cool. Well, you guys can find me on the Google Plus @JeffreyHalish or Twitter @TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show like Lisa, email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Don't forget, if you guys need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNible Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. You guys can also help support the Podnuts Network. Next time you're shopping on Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. My name is Jeff Halish. I am the host of Podnuts, where Chris Carruthers and myself take live calls on the air to answer questions or to get answers from other computer repair techs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/live.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.